The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.
There's these verticals, you know, you hear monitoring, you hear EMS, and you hear DERMS, all these different energy data sort of silos. And I think at the end of the day, the reality is they're all still like so isolated from each other. But these systems, they're duplicative and they don't talk to each other. I think what's coming is, you know, a unification of the monitoring and control planes for all of these assets, solar, storage, EV charging, hydroelectric, you name it.
Are you speeding the energy transition? Here at the Clean Power Hour, our hosts Tim Montague and John Weaver bring you the best in solar, batteries, and clean technologies every week. Want to go deeper into decarbonization? We do too. We're here to help you understand and command the commercial, residential, and utility solar, wind, and storage industries. So let's get to it. Together, we can speed the energy transition.
Today on the Clean Power Hour, monitoring, intelligence, and control in distributed generation. Welcome to the Clean Power Hour. I'm Tim Montague, your host. Check out all of our content at cleanpowerhour.com. Please give us a rating and a review and reach out to me. I love hearing from my listeners. My guest today is Alex Nussey. He is the co-founder and CEO of a company called Watch, which you may not have heard of, but you soon will. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks, Tim. Good morning, and I am so excited to be on.
This is great. It's your first podcast, I understand. So I'm looking forward to bringing Alex Nussey to my listeners. And it's heady days in the solar industry. You're a young professional still, but you have a great story. And I'm just so thrilled to bring your story and Watch to the podcast. But Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get interested in technology and then clean energy?
Yeah, absolutely. Heady days in the solar industry, indeed. I've been in the solar and broader renewables industry for coming up or just over 4 years now. It feels like a lifetime in some ways, but I also know that I'm definitely new to this space by a lot of measures. My personal background is in commercial software as a service. So everything from enterprise software, CRMs, to autonomous vehicles and different kinds of like application performance monitoring. And I fell in love with solar in undergraduate. I was at Georgia Tech as part of the competitive solar car racing team. If you haven't heard of this before, it's a 2,000-mile cross-country trip in a solar-powered electric vehicle. And I did that really for fun, but I kind of caught the solar bug. And ever, you know, after leaving the team, it was always a question of when I was going to get into the renewable space professionally, rather than an if.
So you're a good person to answer that question, which I get lots of. How far can a car go on solar energy?
You know, if the car is light enough and you give up all of your basic amenities, then it can run essentially forever. the American challenges along the Oregon Trail and the international challenges in Australia through the outback, and the best teams will run at 65 miles an hour, you know, essentially forever as long as the sun's shining. But cool. They're not the most comfortable vehicles.
Kind of like a spaceship on the ground, maybe.
Yeah.
So what is the origin story though of Watch? Why did you create Watch?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually got started making IV curve testers. You know, we wanted one for the solar car racing team to measure our solar array and decided to build our own as part of a sort of undergrad design project in college. And, you know, we had a bunch of contacts in the commercial solar world through that team and networking events. And so it's kind of a long story, but one conversation led to another and we kind of discovered this hole in the space as we saw it in data analytics. Everyone had a lot of data, not always well standardized or normalized, and didn't really know what to do with it. And my like I mentioned, my co-founders and I met in undergrad and had all kind of gone our separate ways, but decided to apply for this DOE program called the American Made Challenges. It's sort of very early stage funding. I'll plug that for any entrepreneur thinking about getting into clean tech, American Made Challenges. And they wrote us our first check, $50,000. And that was enough for us to kind of start the business and build out the first MVP of the product and start finding partners and early customers.
Yeah, that's a great program that the DOE runs. You know, it's basically seed money, right? For early stage companies that are making innovations in clean energy. And this is a very important role that the DOE plays at many levels of development, actually, not just early stage. But but what was the problem, I guess, that you saw with the industry and the opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, first, just to finish my plug on the American Made Challenges, it's sort of three levels, I would say, across different prize programs, not just solar, also hydroelectric. And it's one of the only DOE or federal funding programs at all where they'll put money in ahead of time. So you're not filing for reimbursement. They'll actually just write you the check up front and really change the game for our business. Let us get started. Yes. So when we got started, we thought the problem we were solving was just a question of data analytics. But really, as we dug further into the space, the whole data value chain for the emerging and most rapidly growing businesses in this space we were just shocked at what we found. And I think that providing simple, easy to use and easy to understand intelligence for operators with growing portfolios is what we do today. And we work with clients with projects ranging from 10 kilowatts up to about 25 megawatts, really anything in that range to help a small team of operations professionals, O&M providers, manage a very large geographically distributed portfolio.
Yeah. So you're a performance monitoring platform at your core. And is there in most of these systems, there's some kind of a hardware platform, but tell us what are the components and what are the benefits to the status quo, I guess. That's the big question in most listeners' minds. Like today, companies are using also energy, probably 80%. That is the gorilla in the room. So tomorrow, when they convert to watch, what is different?
Yeah, that is a great question. You might not be surprised to hear that I get asked that a lot. I would say that at our core, just to clarify, Watch is a data company. We think of ourselves as a data company first and not a hardware business or a sort of pro-serve provider or a technology vendor. When we compare Watch to other legacy products in this space, we sort of focus on three areas of differentiation. The first is simplicity. We think it's really important for scale is just repeatability and simplicity in the process of collecting and analyzing that data. So all of our hardware solutions are sort of programmed identically at the factory. It's all self-service setup, scanning QR codes, uploading CAD files. We try to make it as easy as possible to monitor your project well, doing the right thing easy. And that means across the board, selecting the right equipment, being secure, collecting high fidelity data. All of that should be turnkey wherever possible. I'd say the second and biggest what really drives people towards us most of the time is what we can do with that data on the intelligence side. The sort of core feature, I guess, of the performance analytics platform at Watch is our digital twin. That means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But essentially, we can use what we know about the design of your project to simulate its ideal output at any time, second to second, at the level of the site, an inverter, or a string of modules. And usually when people think of performance analytics in that way, they're thinking in watts and kilowatts. We're sort of closer to something like a PV Syst, where we're analyzing the sort of ideal voltage and current of every module at the site in essentially real time. And by overlaying that digital twin, that ideal output characteristic of every component with the real data, can help operators find problems. We say commission a site, and the first minute you can find single module stringing mistakes just by looking at the string voltages on the site.
Yeah. And how do you create that digital twin? I'm imagining that you take an as-built of the solar farm or solar facility, and then you're embedding that information in a piece of hardware ultimately, but it's a software model of the facility. And then you're doing this real-time comparison of here's what's happening, here's what should be happening, and is that kosher or something is not right, right?
Yeah, exactly. So in order to get that ideal output of the site, we do need the as-built. We try to make that as easy as possible. If you have a PDSYS, you can just actually upload that directly to Watch and we'll pull the relevant data out, or you can sort of build it in our UI in the cloud. It's fairly straightforward, just all the information that you'd expect in a single line drawing. And then from there, that sort of stringing and physical layout information is combined with live weather data captured by meteorological stations on site or sort of any weather data source. But we want that live, real feed. And then the third is the performance characteristics of all of the components. So you think of like a PAN file for a module or the data sheet for a solar inverter. We also use primarily sort of independent test lab data. So CEC, as an example, they'll buy modules and inverters and actually test them on a bench. And we use those real performance characteristics rather than what the manufacturer's data sheet says. And then run all three of those things through our sort of simulation engine. And you get that sort of optimal output for the whole farm, whole installation. And our alerting system will point out any deviations from that you know, sort of ideal baseline.
And how hard is this? You know, there's such a variety of types of equipment, you know, literally dozens of solar panel manufacturers and inverter manufacturers, maybe not dozens of inverter manufacturers, but a dozen, certainly. Can you play with all types of hardware irrespective, or are there limitations there?
If you're looking at the oldest sort of vintage of solar farms, there may be some availability or compatibility issues, but generally anything built in the last 5 years and certainly coming up in the future, we like to say we have universal compatibility with new equipment.
Yeah.
Luckily, there's enough of a standards-driven approach these days that we can figure out how to get the data into Watch.
And if I'm an asset owner, and you know today I've got my system, call it also energy for lack of a better expression, right? And you know that system is giving me a green, yellow, red light basically. And then tomorrow I install Watch. What can I expect? What is the compelling value proposition, I guess, for Watch that makes customers make the switch?
Yeah. So I think the question I like to ask asset owners is, how do you know if your portfolio is healthy? You know, when you're talking about utility scale sites with people on, you know, physical staff, physically on site all the time, that's pretty easy to quantify. You can just go check things. But with a distributed portfolio, how do you know if it's healthy? And that green, yellow, red that you're getting out of the standard monitoring tools today, the accuracy on that is fairly low, and it doesn't really help you identify the source of that underperformance. With Watch, we tell folks that if you sort of follow our guidelines, the accuracy on our diagnostics is about 1.5% sort of total error. And at the highest level, what does that mean for our customers? Empirically, on average, across our whole install base in CNI and DG, after customers switch to Watch, we see a average performance improvement, weather adjusted, of about 8% in the first 3 months. And that's a sort of shockingly high number. And I won't begin to claim that we're actually doing the work of resolving those issues. But, you know, these portfolios are growing so rapidly. Our goal is to put, you know, confident information or confident diagnoses in the hands of operators so they can do their job in a timely fashion and make sure that everything is performing the way it should.
So how does I'm a little confused. I'm also excited. I mean, 8%, an 8% improvement is a significant number, but I don't quite follow how Watch can lead to improved performance.
Yeah, I mean, our core client base is commercial scale solar, and increasingly DG sort of front of meter community scale solar as well. But these assets have, they vary so much in the way that they're installed, you know, different tilts and azimuths all on one roof, different string lengths. The traditional approach is to finding small sources of underperformance. It's very coarse grained. So you can, you know, easily miss small problems. And when we bring on these commercial portfolios, we generally find, you know, lots of small issues with these sites. Some of them have been there since the sites were built. Just stringing mistakes, you know, too many modules on this string, not enough on this string. Okay. And these are the kinds of things that they really add up over time, and just helping asset owners be more effective in their dispatching. The third sort of element I was going to touch on with our value prop is this idea of remote control over assets. So when you think of utility scale, of course, everyone has full control and dispatchability on their assets. But as you get down into smaller and smaller sizes, that capability is generally not found. It's cost prohibitive in the way that it's traditionally implemented. But with Watch, we give, from any project size across our whole sort of service range, you get near real-time remote control over these assets. And that can be used for sort of the obvious things. People think grid services when I talk about controls generally, or EMS. Mm-hmm. But you can also do things like clear faults or run remote diagnostics, all without, you know, leaving your nice air-conditioned office. And that sort of, again, leads to the goal of reducing truck rolls, saving time, and improving efficiency for these often overworked teams.
And can you achieve an installation without going on site?
It's a great question. So the best data we generally find is collected when customers use our hardware. But we have a number of different ways of getting the data into our cloud. And we can absolutely do sort of no-touch retrofits in many, many cases. If the data lives somewhere, we can probably get it into Watch. That control component generally does require a site visit, very fast installation in almost all cases, and we've kind of seen it all in terms of retrofits. But we like to start with new customers. Let's bring all of your data from your whole portfolio into Watch from day one, and then as you're building new sites, replacing components at old sites, sort of bring the best of the functionality to your historic portfolio by retrofitting on our hardware. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. I mean, so what is the standard hardware installation that you're making?
Yeah. And I mentioned that we are at our core a data company. So we don't actually manufacture any hardware in-house. Mm-hmm. We've partnered with a couple of different manufacturers here in North America, predominantly AccuEnergy, well-known for their energy meters. They build sort of, as anyone that's bought monitoring before would expect, sort of a turnkey DAS, is the term, enclosure, weather-rated box with a power supply, you know, surge protection, cellular modem, and our, we call it an edge controller. We think of it as kind of a data logger all grown up. Okay. The data logger with the control capabilities that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the only branded piece of hardware in that box. Largely open architecture. It's all brands that customers are already familiar with. And then the brain at the center of that system is our first party product.
Yeah. And as a data first company, how do you explain this to lay people, like why this is so important? I mean, it's great to have these statistics about, well, we're going to improve the performance of your asset, bottom line, right? Everybody wants more kWh out of their asset. That is revenue, one way or another. It's either savings or it's revenue if it's a third-party owned PPA, right? You know, everybody and their mother is a data company also, to some extent. So what is changing about software as a service and our capabilities in data analytics that make you special?
Yeah. So you said something which I think is really important. Everyone and their mother is a data company. And I think to some extent that's true. I think any business in solar is going to try and find a data angle, especially with all the, you know, the noise and buzz around machine learning and AI. But really, I think part of what differentiates Watch is that's all we do. That's our specialty. And our customers sort of up and down the size range look to us as a partner in data and then, and everything that comes with that, security, communications. And then that lets them treat sort of the other parts of the value chain, things like inverters, as commodity hardware. If you're not bound to, you know, sort of a walled garden ecosystem of one sort of hardware manufacturer's data ecosystem, it means that you can have more choice around availability and pricing and lead times on that area. I also think we are able to deliver a service that is easier to use, easier to work with. We're able to be, you know, nimble and flexible because of our sort of cloud and software first approach. You know, we have tried to take as much of the complexity out of hardware and into software as possible because it's much faster to change and it lets our customers sort of get to market as quickly as they can.
The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.
Yeah. So what are some of the other benefits, I guess, you know, if you're a SCADA engineer at a big asset owner and, you know, you're trying to figure out, is our solution good enough? What else should they know about Watch that might make them go, oh, we should probably take a demo?
Yeah. So we think of SCADA engineers as some of our best friends. Watch is not attempting to replace SCADA in its sort of traditional definition. Generally, for our larger projects, we're sitting on top of a SCADA system on site and providing that remote observability and intelligence layer where SCADA is enforcing the, you know, very low level safety controls. That is not something we're trying to displace, just to be clear. Though for a lot of our smaller projects, we can solve problems that traditionally you would use SCADA to solve, things like zero export control or economic dispatch of assets. We can sort of handle that in our product, eliminating the need for SCADA on small systems. But I think generally the thing that our sort of most sophisticated customers like is how easy to work with we are. Like I mentioned, everything comes from the factory, from Watch, sort of programmed agnostically. So you can keep a pile of our parts in the back of your truck. And if you're on site, you can grab one of our edge devices, plug it in, and start working with essentially any configuration that you have on site and get that set up in our cloud product in just a handful of minutes. You're not, because everything's standardized, you're not dealing with long lead times generally, and you're not shipping things back to the factory to be reprogrammed. And then it lets us also solve some of the most frustrating problems that SCADA engineers face around networking and firewall configurations and VPNs. Our technology can work with almost any networking configuration, and the control layer and is all handled in our sort of application layer protocol. So very easy to work with, I think, is really where we try to.
Yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall as a technician is installing these systems, not just yours, but others, right? And seeing, because it's easy to say, oh, it's going to be a piece of cake. I guess that's one of the gnarly questions is truly how easy is it? Do you have an example for us in terms of being onboarded by a customer in some sizable manner in a way that they were like, wow, this was easy?
Yeah. I think you said something really important. It's easy to talk a big game. And the question is always, you know, how true is that? And we really, if this was a sales call, we'd really just encourage you to try it once. You know, a lot of these players are building sites constantly. Just give us a try on one project. You don't like it, you know, leave you alone. And that sort of first one's free mentality, I think, is the best way to believe it is to see it. And we find that once customers try us once, we're generally in the door. I think there's 1,001 little ways that monitoring systems, control systems can create frustration. And we spent the first 3 years of our business just sitting on roofs and in fields, talking to the electricians and technicians that were installing these systems and ironing out every little kink that we could. And when we bring new customers on, I tell them, if you are frustrated with something, I want you to tell me, right? This is not a done product. That's the beauty of software, right? Is it's always improving. So if you have feedback, we have an email address that goes to our whole product team. All the engineers get it. And we release new features every Monday. So if there is a burr in your process, tell us and we'll fix it. And I think that's kind of the first wow moment that a lot of our customers feel is they do an install, they're 99% happy with it, and they have one piece of feedback. And then the next week for their next installation, it's already solved. And that's, I think by leveraging the latest and greatest technology, it lets us be agile even with a small team and responsive to customers' needs.
So the company started in 2020 with a grant and a handful of people with some good ideas and some, you know, some skills. Where have you come in the last 4 years, and what are your, what are you seeing in the market in terms of your, you know, of your future?
Yeah, let's see, 4 years. Like I said, it feels like a lifetime sometimes. We got started late 2019, early 2020 with that DOE funding. And the first, really the first 2.5 years were like heads down building. You know, we had a handful of pilot customers that were willing to try things and iterate with us. And we built out a minimum viable product, which is pretty wide in this space. You need to be able to cover a lot of bases. And I learned just a ton from those three or four of our earliest clients.
Tell us about them. Are there some clients you can talk about?
Yeah, yeah. I'd say our first customer, I'll give them a shout out, Cherry Street Energy here in Atlanta. Radiant Solar is another one very early with us, also here in Atlanta. And in that first 2.5 years, we were very sort of geographically focused in the Southeast, which has some interesting, you know, market implications for the kinds of projects we see, as you might imagine. But you know, I just use Cherry Street as an example. They're building large CNI installations, rooftops, carports, things like that for everyone from the Fortune 500 to municipalities and nonprofits. And that portfolio varies widely in composition, capacity, technology. And once their team knows our product really well, you know, we can be rolled out on a dozen projects and, you know, in one order, and it's all comes on one pallet. Their team doesn't need to worry about what boxes go where. It's all identical hardware, and they can it's that collaborative mindset. I just want to like sort of focus on that again. I think as this industry is changing and evolving, we like to work with people that are forward thinkers so that we can skate to where the puck is going from a technology perspective. And to answer the question you asked about sort of growth over the last 4 years, it's been about, is it 14 months ago now, we raised our first sort of institutional venture capital funding, some great investors from across the energy industry. And in the last just year and change, we've gone from, you know, a handful of early projects in the Southeast to got about just over 1,000 sites, 22 states now, covering most of the different markets. And I think the trend that we see is, I'm sure you hear this from everybody, but storage, it's happening. And anybody that isn't thinking about their storage strategy is behind. And that's sort of the big focus for us. We think we have a really differentiated and competitive project in solar monitoring. So storage is kind of the next logical step for us.
And how hard is that to go from solar alone to solar and storage?
Well, the good news is from a commercial and industrial sort of project perspective, I think all of these buildings eventually are going to want storage. It's a question of, you know, how far down the price curve do batteries need to come before that makes sense. But from that perspective, I think we're in the right segment to be innovating in that area. All of our customers are developing storage strategies, so we learn a lot from working with them. But it's definitely a big jump. I think the good news is this sort of controls-enabled strategy that we've taken means that we can roll out storage control features to our customers without adding any new hardware. And I think that's fairly differentiated in the monitoring space. Our data logger is capable of doing everything from reporting data to running sophisticated, you know, model predictive control loops on site. And that means that as our customers add storage, EV charging, submetering, whatever it is, just tie it into the intelligence you already have on site and lights up as another little panel in our UI. Mm. So I think what's particularly challenging about storage is how much it varies based on use case. You know, you have people that are looking for demand charge mitigation, resilience, wholesale market participation, and is a lot of moles to whack, for lack of a better term.
Yes, for sure. The value stack of storage is very nuanced and geographic. Check out my interview with David Braun recently from Intelligent Generation.
Listening to that this morning, actually.
Oh, yeah, we love IG here in PJM territory. You know, I'm looking at your about page. The website for Watch is watch.io. And if you go to the about, you'll see some bios of the leadership team or the board of directors. But scroll down and you see a heat map of your customer base, which is quite impressive for a four-year-old company, you know, over 1,000 installations, 22 states. And yeah, you are heavy in the Southeast, but you're in California, Arizona, Texas, New Jersey, Massachusetts. I mean, you're in most of the major Colorado, most of the major solar markets. So kudos.
Thank you. It's been a really exciting last year. And I think the good news is as the industry is growing so quickly, you know, all ships rise together or whatever the metaphor is, with the tide. And we like partnering with the forward thinking, you know, thought leaders in this industry. And as their deployment grows, so does ours.
Yeah. So what, in our last few minutes together, Alex, where do you see the industry going and what is it that keeps you up at night?
This is two questions. I'll start with what keeps me up at night, and that's cybersecurity. I think there are the sort of the big news stories that most folks in the industry see, you know, European wind farms getting shut down or inverter backends getting hacked and you know, unauthorized users being able to push firmware updates. But as the penetration of these small scale assets just continues to increase, cybersecurity really, really does keep me up at night. I think there's, you know, you have these NERC, SIP, Critical Infrastructure Protection has cybersecurity guidelines, but those only apply to very large projects. And, you know, these 5-10 megawatt community solar projects aren't governed by a lot of the legislation and requirements around cyber. And that adds up, you know, you don't need 100 megawatt projects if you can get into enough small ones. So I think that's another example of somewhere it's something we take seriously and are working with, again, small team, not going to claim to be the global experts on this, but we want to know who those experts are and work with them and learn from them and make it as easy as possible to do the right thing for our customers. You know, if you're an EPC, you probably don't have cybersecurity professionals on your staff. So we want to make the point and click option a secure and reliable one. So if you have a spreadsheet with usernames and passwords in it, please call me. we'll work on that. What was the second part of that question?
Like when you look into your crystal ball, where is the solar monitoring industry growing, going and how is it changing?
Yeah, I think there's these verticals, you know, you hear monitoring, you hear EMS and you hear DERMS, all these different energy data sort of silos. And I think at the end of the day, the reality is they're all still like so isolated from each other. You look at a monitoring system and it's almost universally a one-way data logger that's like uploading a CSV every, you know, 5 minutes. You look at an EMS and it's usually a server installed on site that is running that control loop. And it maybe it reports to the cloud, but it can't take instructions from the cloud. And then you look at something like a DERMS or whatnot. And that's meant to be sort of cloud to edge control. But these systems, they're duplicative and they don't talk to each other. I think what's coming is, you know, a unification of the monitoring and control planes for all of these assets, solar, storage, EV charging, hydroelectric, you name it, all these DERs. And I think the sort of better than the sum of its parts value that comes from integrating these capabilities into one platform is what's going to be pushing things forward over the next 5 years. I think it's an inevitability at this point. And it's a question of sort of what parts get integrated first.
Sounds like a hard problem.
Yes. Lots of stakeholders, lots of different requirements. Yeah. You look at, you know, annual investor reporting versus, you know, second by second energy dispatch decisions in an EMS. And but it's all the same data. And I think all those different systems should be learning from each other, not being procured and operating in isolation.
Yeah. You mentioned learning and you know, of course, AI broke onto the scene for the general population in 2023. Is that technology, these large language models, is that relevant to watch?
That's a great question. I will start by saying that what we're selling today, we do not use the words machine learning or AI. Our sort of performance models, we talked about the digital twin, it's physics. You know, we've just commercialized thousands of pages of research from, you know, the best minds, Sandia and Rel, in the space. These are deterministic, well-characterized. The behavior of silicon semiconductors is one of the best understood physical properties in the world, right? So we're just commercializing academic research, making it easy to use. There's no ML, and I don't think there should be, because you want deterministic, well understood. That's how you build confidence. Where I see the role of machine learning and AI is in the predictive side, on the predictive maintenance machine learning, and then the large language models, which are certainly occupying the public mindshare right now. It's very interesting to me when we talk about analyzing like maintenance logs. Obviously, that's a sort of a what do folks do with the insights that Watch gives them? They make maintenance decisions and they go on site and they find the real root problem. And as that data set, not just with us, but industry-wide grows, I think there's, you know, so much of those records live in disparate systems. And if we can bring it all together and analyze it, I think that there's, you know, just so much more that can be done from an efficiency perspective.
Agreed. Well, what else should our listeners know, Alex? Anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to talk about?
I think you asked some great questions. Definitely covered the bases pretty well. I think, you know, actually, you know, yeah, I think that pretty much covered everything. I really appreciate it.
Great. Well, you can look forward to seeing Watch at many of the regional solar shows. So again, check out watch.io, WATTCH.io, and check out the Clean Power Hour. All of our content is at cleanpowerhour.com. Give us a rating and a review on Apple and Spotify, and tell a friend about the show. Alex, how can our listeners find you?
You can find us at Watch, that's spelled with two T's. It's a great pun, very funny. Watch.io will be at, like you said, all the regional shows. NABCEP, I think, is the next one coming up. Our DistribuTech next week, this week, and then NABCEP after that. And please get in touch, reach out. Even if you're not interested in our product, we love connecting with people that are imagining the future of renewable energy. So don't be a stranger.
Thank you so much. I'm Tim Montague. Let's grow solar and storage. Hey, listeners. This is Tim. I want to give a shout out to all of you. I do this for you twice a week. Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us your time. I really appreciate you and what you're all about. You are part and parcel of the energy transition, whether you're an energy professional today or an aspiring energy professional. So thank you. I want to let you know that the Clean Power Hour has launched a listener survey, and it would mean so much to me
if you would go to cleanpowerhour.com, click on the About Us link right there on the main navigation. That takes you to the About page, and you'll see a big graphic, listener survey. Just click on that graphic, and it takes just a couple of minutes. If you fill out the survey, I will send you a lovely baseball cap with our logo on it. The other thing I want our listeners to know is that this podcast is made possible by corporate sponsors. We have Chin Power Systems, the leading three-phase string inverter manufacturer in North America. So check out CPS America. But we are very actively looking for additional support to make this show work. And you see here our media kit with all the sponsor benefits and statistics about the show. You know, we're dropping two episodes a week. We have now over 320,000 downloads on YouTube, and we're getting about 45,000 downloads per month. So this is a great way to bring your brand to our listeners. And our listeners are decision makers in clean energy. This includes project executives, engineers, finance, project management, and many other professionals who are making decisions about and developing, designing, installing, and making possible clean energy projects. So check out cleanpowerhour.com, both our listener survey on the About Us and our media kit, and become a sponsor today. Thank you so much. Let's grow solar and storage. The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter. With over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S., the CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chinpowersystems.com to find out more.